Hi, everyone. Welcome to the show, The Metaphysical World and More. My name is Nancy Wallace, and I host the show. And today, we have another great guest on. And so far, I hope everybody's Easter has been pretty good. But sit back, enjoy the next hour. He has a lot of information to give us and a lot of good questions. So, hi, Dr. John J. Harper. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Nancy. Great to be with you.
Good. Now, can I call you John?
Yes, please.
Okay. John, can you tell the listeners a little bit about who you are, and then we'll go in and I will ask you questions, okay?
Yeah. Who I am today is a lot different than I was 20 years ago in the sense that I was a engineer with the U.S. Department of Defense until my retirement in the early 1990s, but I had a profound metaphysical, spiritual event that changed me from a left-brain scientist to more of a whole-brain metaphysician, if you will. November 1987, one of my good friends and colleagues who was a quantum physicist, actually specializing in optics or laser technology, died suddenly one Monday morning at age 40 of a massive heart attack. My friend George Vigay was from Louisiana, as someone who I had known for 17 years at that time. He and I had served in the U.S. Army together, both in the United States and in Europe. So we formed a real close friendship, and our wives were friends, and our children were born about the same time, so it was a real close-knit group. So when George died suddenly in November 1987, I was thrown into an intense period of grief and shock, and I asked my management for a transfer from the Southeast United States, working with the Army Missile Command, to work for the Navy up in the Pacific Northwest, where I grew up in the greater Seattle, Washington area. And what makes the story different is that in June 1988, some 6 months after my friend George died, I had a profound awakening in consciousness. At 4 o'clock one spring morning there in June, early June, I saw my deceased friend standing at the foot of my bed. And I thought initially it was a lucid dream. I tried to wake myself from this dream, only to find him standing there in what I would now call a holographic projection of physical presence, but made of pure light. From that moment on, I've never been the same, because I spent about 15 years of my life researching physics and metaphysics to understand how that could be possible, and reconciling the differences in science and religion, trying to find a single truth that I could cling on to and maintain my sanity. And I feel like I've done that. So today, like I say, I'm a different person. I'm more relaxed with what's going on in the world. I feel like I understand it at a greater level. And it has to do with energy transformations.
Okay. Now, John, when you saw your friend, I'm sure the very first thought is that you really are seeing things, or you're in this dream state, which most people at some point in time, I believe, really have, whether they are willing to acknowledge it or not. They are capable, and they do get it. Would you find that to maybe be true?
Yes. We're culturally indoctrinated, both in religion and science, to pretty much stay in the here and now. We're really grounded, even though we might have some very interesting philosophical ideas about life after death or the spiritual realm. We're pretty much grounded as to our experiences of that realm. Those of us who've had these experiences are probably more shocked than anyone listening to our stories, at least initially. There's a sense of urgency when you have these experiences. You want to share them, and you find real quickly that others do not want to listen to this otherworldly experience. And so you feel ostracized and isolated, and I think most of us in the past just simply go into a kind of a shell and remain silent about them.
And I think that's very true. I had what I guess you would call a near-death experience when I was 6 years old. It was a very freak accident where I landed actually with my head and neck under my back. So for all practical purposes, I should have either been dead or paralyzed, and I'm either one. But during that experience, I was visited by angels, and these angels had been with me ever since. But they were talking to me, and they were telling me that I'm okay, there's nothing wrong with you, you're going to know a lot of things now, you can't use it yet, we'll let you know when. So as I was coming to, this is what I constantly heard. I mean, like repeated, like it was, you know, a tape being replayed the entire time I was coming back to wherever I'd been. I don't remember seeing a white light or anything like that, but I've had that experience where I now have my angels that are with me all the time. And because of them, I wrote an autobiography so that people would understand that they are not alone, that a lot of people go through these experiences, but if you don't share them with somebody, it makes you feel very much alone. My case scenario was is that my voices, my angels that I call them, would really not let me share them with anybody, because if I had done that, because I could start to see people that they were going to die. But if I went to approach them to let them know that, I would hear my voice tell me, this isn't your concern, it's already predetermined, they're going to a better place, you have to stay out of it, let it be. You know, so I grew up with that. So I was protected the entire time that I've grown up. But a lot of people are not. They want to be like you. They want to say, you know, I had this experience, I want to talk about it, I want to share it. And like you said, you usually run up against a blank wall where people go, oh, no, I don't believe in that, I don't want to hear that. And in reality, all they're doing is trying to hide with their fear, because there's a possibility that something like that has may have happened to them, or some experiences come very close to that. So I think, John, the more people open up, the more they share, the more they let people know what's really going on, the more we can finally start to open up ourselves. You know, people call it the third eye, you know, but we all have that ability. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. And this idea that, you know, we're prevented from sharing is a very real sensation to those of us like yourself, Nancy, who have had these profound experiences. And what I've come to realize is it's really a filter to protect not only the other person but ourselves as well. We can really do a lot of damage when we go off thinking we're the ones with the sacred message to deliver to the world. This Messiah complex can get a lot of people in trouble. So I think there's a lot of wisdom built into the system of sharing these types of experiences. I know that when the right time came, the doors opened up and had every opportunity I needed to share these things. And other times when I realized it just wasn't the right moment, it was time for me to be mature enough to realize that. And that took some time. That did not come initially. That took years to grow into this event that I had that opened my third eye. And indeed, that's where we're going. In my opinion, we are absolutely going into a period of history called the Golden Age, Age of Enlightenment, where we're going to see angels. We're going to see the space in front of us open up multidimensionally. We're going to communicate telepathically with animals and other beings on other worlds. This is the message, I think, overall, that the time of the third eye to open again is in progress.
Mm-hmm. And I think you're right. Now, most people talk about the year 2012, but as a child, the visions that I always got were starting on 2010 and working their way up. But we'll stick with 2012 because that's what people look at, you know, because they think the world is coming to an end. But that's not really true, is it?
No. In fact, 2010 has come up in my research, by the way, with others. In fact, I remember in my book I quote someone who talks about huge electromagnetic storms brewing all over the planet, mm-hmm. but especially the Northern Hemisphere around beginning in 2010. I look at 2012, the Mayan calendar end date, as the beginning of the end of the world as we know it.
Mm-hmm.
I tell people the message here is not doom and gloom, but we're being groomed to bloom.
Right.
And what that means specifically is that a new energy is coming into the planet, a new frequency, a new vibration. Now, we've heard this in the New Age circles, but I come from a traditional electronics engineering, computer science, and medical background. I can tell you there's some very wise people with some very good credentials in the medical fields and in the scientific community that know for a fact this is happening. They're looking at DNA, for example. They're looking at the secretions of the pineal gland, the dimethyltryptamine, DMT, which indeed opens one's third eye into these other angelic realms. So this is getting hard science. There's studies in progress right now. Some have been completed. Some are ongoing. Some are starting out at a much more mature level. These are facts. These are no longer metaphysical musings by a certain fringe element of society. This is solid science. It's happening in China, Russia, Germany, United States, Canada, etc.
John, why do you think that there are groups and associations, will be nice, groups and associations who are trying to keep us kind of in the dark? Why do you think they don't want us to find out all we really do know versus what they want us to know?
The biggest obstacle to our growth is the idea of the current economic capitalistic system that we operate under. There's nothing wrong with, in my opinion, with capitalism. However, if, for example, let's say that in my case, when my friend came to me, he opened up this third eye mechanism, the pineal pituitary gland mechanism, and for a short time there I communicated telepathically with him. I'm also extremely intuitive now because of this shock and awe experience that I had almost 20 years ago. But the point is that if you can communicate telepathically, you don't need a cell phone. If you can communicate with other realms, you don't need to sit in front of a television for entertainment. You can provide your own multidimensionally, and so on and so forth. If you can do these psychic phenomenon for yourself and see these energies for yourself, you don't need a microscope or a telescope, for example, to look at the microcosm or the macrocosm. If you can see for yourself, then all the technologies that we run this world on will fall by the wayside. You'll no longer need to be a consumer. And so whether those who are embedded in the capitalistic system know that or not, that's what they're afraid of. They're afraid they're going to lose their livelihood. That's a survival mechanism kicking in, and that fear-based mentality will actually keep us from having this metaphysical transition in 2012 or thereabouts.
Do you think that there are enough people now, John, that are starting to be aware or that have waken up or that already have been there, you know, several times over to help bring in this manifested right that we have that we're kind of being stopped with?
Yes. I think we're at the point of the critical threshold, in fact, in 2008, and I really appreciate that question. 2008 to me is the pivotal year. We either get it now or we're going to be sent back to a point technologically and politically and economically that the hardship will be so great that the fear levels will kick in again and we'll end up in chaos and not with new order. But remember, too, that the systems dynamic model, if you will, of chaos theory, which the weather is a part of, but so is Wall Street, chaos always leads to new order if left alone. In other words, you got to go with the flow at some point. You got to not be so, you know, we have to be tuned to what's happening and say, you know, I'm just going to let this happen now. I don't need to control anymore. I don't need to be afraid anymore. All I need is open up and just, you know, just breathe deep and take care of your health and leave everyone alone. Let everyone do their own thing pretty much and let the system rebalance. Yes, there's going to be wars and rumors of wars, and yes, there's going to be natural disasters off the scale. These things will all settle down, but they will not if we continue to try to tamper with nature, if we continually try to, you know, say, you know, put our finger in every dam that we see leaking in a Middle West USA metaphor today. I mean, you know, the system is cleansing itself. It's purging itself. This must happen. The key, though, is to have the wisdom to see it as such and then get out of the way.
Yeah, that's a big thing. Get out of your own way.
Yeah.
And that's where people are having a hard time. They have this thing, along with the fear, is that control factor, that they think they can, you know, can control everything, and they think that they're the ones who, you know, can stay on top. And the problem with that is that they are limiting their own mind's ability to allow it to happen the way it should.
Yes, and technically, Nancy, it's the amygdala, the lower brainstem, is responsible for the fear response. And so what happens is when you can control the people in fear through religion or science or any other type of coercion, military force, what you're doing is triggering the amygdala's, it clamps down basically the brain functions, the higher brain functions. You do not get this pineal gland opening that I'm talking about, this third eye opening experience. That's why you see great numbers of people that meditate for years and years and years. They get to this point that I'm talking about, that what happens when they do, then the system kicks in and they try to trigger fear. Look at Tibet, for example.
Mm-hmm.
That's a classic example, a symbolic example of what's going on in the world. You've got those who are already there, actually, in this higher realm of consciousness, now really have to fight for survival. And so, you know, even though you're a pacifist or a peace-loving person, there's a time when enough is enough. And if you want to survive, you do have to defend yourself. So I don't want to get anyone in the wrong state of mind here. You certainly have the ability and the need to protect yourself, let's say, both metaphysically and physically. But the wisdom is the real key, isn't it? You know, there's a fine line between using too much force and not enough, eating too much and eating too little, and so on and so forth. So balance is always the key.
And it is. Like a lot of the readings that I do, you know, I talk about people allowing themselves to grow, allowing themselves to open, be who they need to be. Don't ask other people what they think they should be doing. Trust that feeling that they get. Go with that inner peace of mind. And don't keep yourself so uptight about everything. You know, everybody I talk to, they worry. And it's like, you know, it's fine. I mean, there's a point there where whatever you tend to worry about and put all that emotion behind it, you have got to make it happen.
And you want to look for the answers in your dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we have someone like you that we can come to and talk to and counsel us, that sets in motion the answer to the problem. And folks, a lot of times they're looking to someone like you for the answer, and what you can do is ask the right questions of them to set up the solution in the dream state.
Right. People say, well, how can I fix this? And I tell them, no, I'm not the one who can fix it for you. You know, I'm giving you some key components here. You really have to still do your part.
Yes.
You know, I can tell you the things, but I can't do them for you. And people look at me like, you mean you're not going to do it? And it's like, no, I'm not going to do it. You have to do your part. It's the only way you're going to wake up. It is the only way you're going to really see the truth. You know, you can't sit there like little sheep waiting for somebody to herd you down one path when everything inside of you is going on a different path.
That's right.
And it's that different path that you need to follow, no matter what people say, no matter what people think. Because I hear all day long, well, what so-and-so going to think? It's like, who cares? What do you think?
You
know?
That's right.
Allow it. You know?
Yeah, I know I spent a lot of years as a clinical mental health counselor and also as a clinical hypnotherapist and a biofeedback therapist and a number of these types of modalities of healing. And the key, though, the focus for me has always been self-empowerment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember on the great temple of Apollo in Delphi, Greece, above one of the temples there was the axiom, know thyself. And that is the key, because each of us are a unique expression of the universe. We really are. Our DNA is configured in a similar way, so we're really only one human being. There's 20 amino acids, and that DNA is what gives us our expression. I mean, the DNA has that memory, ability to tap the memory of our past life and even our future life, because we live in a hologram, a whole message. And this is even good physics now. We understand that we're processing the past, in the future through the present moment, the eternal now. And what that means, though, is that we have the opportunity to change on a dime, literally. If we can let go of our belief systems that are keeping us back and also process the information that's coming to us symbolically, like, say, in the dream state, because that's the higher dimensional realm, the realm that has more energy in it, also known as the fifth dimension in physics, the realm of light. And so what we need to do is, once we process everything, you know, really look at it and examine it and feel it more than think it through, but feel it, let it come through the heart chakra. And once that happens, then we need to be awake so we get the answer to the problem. And again, this comes in a state of trance or a deep meditative state or the sleep, the lucid dream state.
Yeah, which is important. Now, you wrote a book, John. Would you tell us the name of the book?
The book is called Transformers, T-R-A-N-C-E, Formers, Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. And that title has a lot of meaning to me because, first of all, I realized I went into an altered state of mind when I saw my friend George. I knew I was in a trance state. So I went on to study clinical hypnosis, for example, and all the altered states of mind literature from back turn of the last century, actually, up until modern times. And what I tried to do was really give everybody an opportunity to both share on the journey that I've been on as I wrote the book, but also to give a lot of reference material so others could go off and look at this these ideas for themselves. But I tried to cover hundreds of topics in physics and metaphysics, and I feel good about what I did so far.
Is physics and metaphysics really close to each other?
Yeah, they're basically mirror images of one another. Physics is dealing with, you might say, the four-dimensional state, three of space and one of time. Metaphysics is dealing with that beyond the physical boundaries of force space, of space and time. So metaphysics is really this higher dimensional realm of energy that we know now is the source of all three-dimensional worlds and time. So again, what we're saying is that you might say that the left and right brain are always trying to get a whole picture of what's going on here and now, but only through the heart. Only the heart is processing the higher dimensional energies. It's feeling its way into the space that we inhabit, in other words. For example, the Egyptians and the Mayans, they knew that space is alive, that space itself has a vibrancy to it. It is what we are communicating with. You know, when you go into a room, let's say of a gathering of a lot of people, and you just see, you sense this has got bad vibes. I just don't feel right in this environment. No one told you anything. You didn't get any kind of physical communication, but your body knew it, and your heart was processing the feeling state of all those people in the room. And then on the other hand, you're kind of depressed, and you go into a group with your friends and loved ones, and all of a sudden you feel buoyant. You feel alive again. Again, it's the heart that's picking up that communication, and it does so through DNA, through biophotons, through electrical energies that's being exchanged in the very space that we inhabit.
And I think it's real important that people start to realize that. I have a nonprofit organization called the Child's Miracle Mind because I have a really hard time with them putting all these kids on the prescription drugs. Mm. And to me, they're shutting them down. They're not allowing them to be who they are, and they're not allowing them to open up. What do you think about that?
Well, it's absolutely true to a great extent. I've got a psychiatrist friend of mine here in the town that I live in, the Northwest, and, you know, I asked him one time, I said, Rob, you know, what about the pharmaceuticals? What about the psychopharmacology agents that we use? And, you know, this is a very caring person and a sensitive person, and he looked at me and he says, John, I try to do my best, but I always have to do what works. So I try to cut them a little bit of slack in that sense, and I've worked in medical clinics and with physicians, and it's a tough job, number one. It's easy to criticize when we see people that are somewhat functional on the street but are still dysfunctional, if you know what I mean, not hospitalized. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you get somebody in a crisis mode, suicidal, clinical depression, et cetera, it's tough not to want to medicate them to a certain level so you can stabilize them and then get them off the drugs. I think that what my criticism would be, we don't get them off the drugs soon enough. And I have eight grandchildren. I have three adult children. I have a daughter, Michelle, who is in her mid-30s, who suffers from clinical depression. My mother suffered from manic depression. My grandmother suffered from manic depression. I'm very tuned into this, so this is a great topic always for me to discuss.
Don't you think, John, that there are better ways rather than drug these young children? I'm talking about like 3 years, 4 years, mm-hmm. 5 years, 6 years that they're sticking on all this Ritalin. See, I truly believe that in the Shinam,
shamanic
yes,
tradition.
Way of healing,
yes.
They didn't use these drugs.
That's right.
They had much better ways to do it.
Yeah, yes. Well, first of all, you know, there's the adage, you know, it takes a village to raise a child. We don't have a village anymore. What we've got is a lot of single parents over their heads with stress trying to cope in an economic system that's stacked against them for the most part. So when you see society destroy itself from within, like we're seeing today in the Western world for the most part, you're going to end up with all these issues with the children. And I've gone through these with my own grandchildren, and I'm very insistent about, you know, minimal pharmacological intervention. But again, you know, it depends on the situation. So everything's got to be looked at individualistically. Also, we don't have enough shamans. This is my book title, Shamans of the 21st Century, you know. I know that if we had a village full of shamans where people could go to and they had this built-in safety net to turn to like they did in the indigenous tribes, not only the Native Americans, but Aboriginal Australians have come to mind, and other groups like this. They had the healing temples in Greece. You know, we have a system that's built on the fact that you must have insurance, you must have money, to be healed. This is not the way the system worked in the ancient world. And in the Chinese medical model, the physician was paid as long as you stayed well, and as soon as you got sick, you drew your payment, whether it was a chicken or whatever. And so we have a system where people have lost their self-empowerment. They don't know, first of all, they can heal themselves. But when it comes to the children who need our assistance, we don't have a system in place for them to go to be healed.
See, and that's what part of my nonprofit organization is about.
Mm-hmm. We need more of them.
It is really trying to work to help get these children off the drugs or never have to be put on them.
Yeah.
You know, and stuff like that. But there's also, you, now, do you do remote viewing?
Well, what remote viewing is to me is the unification of the left and right brain in this meditative state of trance called the theta brainwave. And, yes, I mean, I've had profound experiences in this state of mind since I was a young child. I didn't have a name for it. I just knew that I experienced it. And so, you know, in my book, I share a lot of things that are coming our way in terms of natural disasters, because this is a natural cycle, by the way, and this is what 2012 is. I call 2012 the strange attractor at the end of time, because that's what 2012 is. It's a focal point of consciousness, because there's going to be a convergence of cycles. For example, the precession of the equinox is coming on or about 2012, and that 26,000-year cycle, give or take, is coming full circle around the zodiac. In other words, we've made the 12 tick marks on the celestial clock called the zodiac or circle of animals. That was very important to the ancients, because they knew at that time that the Earth's axis, the pole shift, would begin, and we would have gone from a state where we were 13,000 years tipped away from the center of the Milky Way galaxy, and now we're going to take the next 13,000 years to begin tipping into the center of the galaxy. Now, we're going to actually cross this elliptic, this circle drawn around the galaxy, the sun, and our solar system, and our Earth. The Earth's going to enter into this elliptic on 2012, December 21st, 2012. That is the end of time, because it's like hitting the master reset button back to zero. That's zero time. And then the new time will begin. Well, the reason everyone is kind of sensing this in various ways, some very fearfully, others very expectantly, is we know that these natural disasters are just trying to tell us that, you know, we're entering a time of quantum shift. I mean, shifts happen, and this is what is embedded in all of our cultural traditions throughout the last 26,000-year full cycle. I mean, you've got the sinking of Atlantis, and you've got the rising of this and that, and you've got all these different biblical apocalyptic scenarios unfolding, because they do happen like celestial clockwork. They do happen because they're energetic transformations of the entire planet at one time. So that's why you have this global sense of change. Other times it's just a cyclic thing, like the four seasons. You know, the four seasons are not the same, for example, in the southeast United States as they are in Alaska, for example. The light and day phenomenon are different, etc. But the point is, again, all these changes are converging in one cycle. This is solar cycle 24 to NASA. To an astrophysicist, it's solar cycle 24 that began in January 2008. Will peak with solar flares and very, very intense solar phenomenon on around 2012. And this is science again.
Mm-hmm. There's a group out there, they're called Matrix Institute, and they actually put together a future map of the world and what's going to be changing in it as the Earth itself shifts and does, you know, what you're talking about with all the different underground, you know, volcanoes erupting and the tidal waves coming. And it shows that there's going to be a lot of land that all of a sudden is pretty much underwater, and, you know, mm-hmm. some other land will, of course, you know, come popping
yes,
back
that's
up.
Right. That's right.
And it, according to the future map, it shows that the United States is actually going to be breaking apart to maybe four or five different kind of islands, because there will be water, you know, covering different parts of the land that have never been there before as we know it.
Yeah, I think some of that's true. Now, when I view that, I see that as a potential but not an actual event. I don't think we've reached the point of no return in terms of Earth changes yet. I see things accelerating dramatically, however, you know, 2008 and on through 2012 and beyond. And I think it'll last at least until about 2036, give or take. I mean, really major changes happening every few months, every year or so. There'll be some big, big events. Then I think the Earth will calm down again. 2012 to me is like having your bell rung. That's when your bell is really rung. And the ringing that you'll hear in your ears will go on for a long, long time, but nothing compared to what will happen around that time frame. It'll have to do, again, with electromagnetic shift of the poles, when the axis itself, the electromagnetic fields themselves, not the flipping of the Earth, none of that silliness, that won't happen because the Earth is an electromagnetic gyroscope and the Sun is one, is an electromagnetic gyroscope, and it's 1 million times larger than the Earth. The center of the Milky Way galaxy is several million times greater magnetic pole gyroscope than the Sun. So what you've got is three gyroscopes spinning around each other on their own axis, tilted a certain degree, and they're trying to line up in 2012. So the jostling that's going back and forth is like water in a bathtub kind of spilling over the top. Those are your tsunamis. And what generates that is the undersea volcanic activity, and it comes from energy being run through the center of the Sun, through all the planets in the solar system, and the Earth itself, too. So the point is that there's going to be tremendous shifting and sorting going on at every level, from the animal life, plant life, human life, trying to seek a new balance of energy at a higher level. So if we keep that in mind, we realize that, you know, the big picture is not all that bad, but you don't want to be at the wrong place at the wrong time.
That would be true.
Yeah.
You talk about, or you believe that a lot of the changes that the Earth is making is because of the things that we have done to the planet itself.
Yes.
Can you explain some of that reasoning?
Yes. The real key is magnetism. If we understand that the fourth state of matter, which is plasma, think of the gas in a neon bulb, for example, or even a plasma television technology, the fourth state of matter is plasma. That's an energy beyond solids, liquids, and gases. And plasma, we know now, is what space consists of. There's no emptiness in space. It's plasma. These are magnetic pools of energy, magnetic energy. They're unpolarized. That is, they're not being bled off or drained off in any direction until they come upon an object rotating in space, like a planet, like a sun, like a Milky Way galaxy. Then they feed their energy into these spirals, these vortex spirals. And so what's going on is that we are one of those objects too. We're spinning right here. You and I are talking, but we're also rotating, and don't get dizzy now, but we're rotating at 1,000 miles an hour around the center of our Earth. And we're tilted at about 23.5 degrees. So we're kind of cockeyed, and then we're also spinning at 1,000 miles per hour. So we're pulling energy right out of the space, our atmosphere that we're in right now. Whether we're doing breathing, as long as we're breathing, we're pulling energy in and out through our body chemistry. And so what's going on is these magnetic fields of the Sun and the Earth are becoming more intense. We're pulling more energy as we line up on or about 2012. We're pulling more energy into our Earth and in through us. And so this is, again, leading to the opening of the third eye. It's also the magnetic energy that we're going to use to become much more psychic, telekinesis and all the paranormal powers that we've heard before. And the yogis and all those folks, well, we're all becoming self-initiated shamans. And so that is really the big picture of what's happening today.
Do you think that our DNA is somewhat being changed with all the changes that are going on?
It has to, because DNA, 97%, give or take, of DNA genetic sequences are considered junk or have been in the past. That's changing dramatically now with the Genome Project. We found out that there's not much difference in us and a fruit fly, for example. I mean, you know, just ever so much change. But what's going on there is the ancient wisdom that's in the body. The body's been here since before the Big Bang. The DNA is a liquid crystal that does not die at death. It just crystallizes back into that fourth state of matter, into the plasma fields. And we can think of this as the magnetosphere. We have this huge magnetic bubble around the Earth, and that is several levels that we call heaven, for example. This is what the ancients know. This is where the shamans go. When they say, I'm talking with our deceased ancestor, I'm going to the happy hunting grounds in the sky, you know, and Jesus says, I lift you the way you see me lifting up here into the sky, you'll see me return on clouds of glory, and all these wonderful metaphors. They're telling us the truth. They go into the sky a few thousand miles above our head in the magnetosphere. This is where the near-death experiencers, most of them, found cities of crystal. The fourth state of matter, magnetic, another way of saying that is metal or crystallized material. And that's what we use in the upper realms to build our crystal cathedrals and our beautiful streets of paved with gold, etc. These are valid ways of looking at this higher dimensional world. It's made of consciousness, of pure mind states. So again, to focus though, that's why a lot of our sacred scriptures talk about thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven, trying to converge heaven and earth through the magnetosphere to the surface of the ground. And in the book of Revelation, St. John says, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, new Jerusalem, descend from the clouds. And I think this is appropriate on Easter to talk about that resurrection of the earth, the rebirth of earth.
Yeah, and again, I think it's very important because, you know, when I look at things, I remember as a kid, we really did have four seasons. You know, we had spring, summer, fall, and winter. And now when I look at, you know, nature itself, it's like sometimes there's not four seasons anymore. Sometimes we have two. Sometimes we may have three.
Yes, that's true.
You know, and it tends to make, you know, somebody like myself worry, like, well, you know, why did we have it as a kid, but we're not having it anymore?
Yes. That's because the cycles are converging now, and the energies are going to flip-flop. What you're seeing is a crashing, if you will, of the jet stream above our head. We're looking at winds that go one direction one moment and next moment go the other way. We're looking at temperatures, layers of temperatures that are going from it used to be the upper cold realm stayed there. Now they're dipping down into the lower atmosphere and wreaking havoc. We're having these huge floods and storms, et cetera, and lightning beyond belief. And what's going on is the earth is trying to really domesticate itself, as some call it, and that is slowing down. And this slowing of the earth down in all of its cycles, you know, we probably will for a while go to two extremes. I mean, we'll probably have summer and winter. And then when the fields flip, however, then we'll go back and we'll see these four seasons start to stabilize again. In fact, there'll be actually areas that are almost eternal spring above the equator. Wherever that new equator line will be, there'll be new eternal spring areas, as I call them. And, you know, this is the idea of the Garden of Eden. And we know that, this will lead to spontaneous new species and plant life. Overall, in the long term, literally it's going to be a Garden of Eden. We're going to literally just be able to meditate and pray for the needs of flowers, plants, foodstuff, vegetables. All those things will come literally out of the ground like they were in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was the great fall because, you know, in the book of Genesis, it talks about, everything was given to us, and it was really this beautiful garden of paradise. And then it said, then there will be some type of curse upon us where we'll have to earn our living by the sweat of our brow. And that's the cycle of agriculture. Well, where we're going back to, when you get everything in balance, in other words, when you get energy in balance, everything works as it should. You know, let it go, let it flow. And that's where we're going long term.
Yeah, really good things. Do you have a website that the people can go to?
JohnJHarper.com, JohnJayHarper.com, and there's a lot of articles there and a lot of other good stuff that's free. And feel free to read my blog, and I try to keep that up to date every week.
Now, could you also give us the name of your book again, please?
The book is Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century. I also have a DVD called Science of Soul, the End Time Solar Cycle of Chaos in 2012 AD. And, again, chaos leads to new order, so it's not all bad news in there. It talks about the third eye opening and how that's going to work.
Do you think, John, that as people's third eye opens, or at least the ones who allow it to open, do you think they're going to finally be able to look around and really see the changes that have been made and still more changes that need to be made?
Yes, and that's a good point to expand on a little bit, because the third eye opening, depending on who's around you at the time, sometimes the third eye can open spontaneously. Just the valve can open and go full volume. And this has happened to me on a couple occasions. I think if I hadn't been a real tough kind of nut to begin with, this would have scared me into an emergency room situation. What happened to me in the fall of 1990, for example, I'll share that real quickly. After my friend had died then back in the 1987, and I saw him in June of 88, I really spent a lot of time every day, every waking moment was spent trying to reconcile what happened to me. Well, in September 1990, one evening, I had a full-blown connection to the Akashic records of the new sphere, the greater mind around this planet. And it was a beautiful experience, don't get me wrong. But I remember telling my wife, this lasted for about an hour or so. It was a very lengthy experience. And I got answers about science, religion. I knew I could tap, I tapped the mother load of information, and it was flowing through me like fine wine. And I could just form a question in my mind, and the answer immediately came to me. There was no doubt that it was the truth. But the point is that I told my wife, I said, Connie, if this goes on in the morning, you can forget about me working again. I can't go to work as an engineer in this state of consciousness. So, you know, that's the point. If you're surrounded by people that do not judge you and love you and care for you when you're having this opening, it's going to go a lot smoother. And I'm hoping that programs like yours and all these folks out here that are really tuned into what I'm saying, if they'll share their stories with others and not be afraid, then this transition is going to go a lot smoother.
I think that's very true. What does your wife think about all of the experiences that you do and have gone through?
Well, she's a unique individual. She was born and raised in Independence, Missouri, and she's got the classic Missouri show-me mentality, but she's never been judgmental. She always said, John, that's interesting. I don't have a clue what you're talking about, but isn't that interesting? So I've been blessed. And then I have this family, these kids that have been very open, and grandchildren now. I've got my oldest granddaughter is going to be graduating from high school this year, Catherine, and she's very metaphysical in her own way, but also pretty grounded too. And I've just been surrounded by the right optimal folks, and pretty much, I mean, I've done my own pain and suffering through this learning experience for the last 20 years of this. But I can tell you that overall I survived not because of any inner strength of my own, but because of the support system I had in place. So I have concerns about how this is going to go, you know, globally, because I just don't know how many of us are out there are going to be able to find support when we need it. We certainly, you know, we need to tune the psychologists and the psychiatric community to the idea that, you know, there's going to be a great increase in caseload pretty soon.
That's cute. When you talked about your granddaughter who has got a great deal of psychic ability but very grounded.
Yes.
Do you guys talk about, well, does she ask you questions about some of the things that she's got going on?
Well, yes. And in fact, I run a small home business. I have a nonprofit, too, called American Delphi Academy, which I market books and DVDs to the public. And so this is kind of, I'm talking to you right now from my office, which is about 50 yards from my home, mm-hmm. Up here in the Southfield Medical District of Spokane, Washington. And I've got a very nice office. I'm looking through a beautiful, lovely setting here in my yard with the squirrels and kind of almost spring-like weather and through French doors. And so I'm blessed. And the point is, this is the meeting place for, let's go talk to Papa about angels and this, that, and the other, you know. And Catherine, for example, when she was 5 years old, she was living over in the Seattle area and came to visit her grandparents here. And she was in the living room, and it was snowing, and this was Christmas time. And I remember, now she's 17 now, getting ready to graduate from high school, but when Catherine was five, she looked out the window, and it was snowing. And she's looking up the tree, and she pointed, and she looked at me, and she said, Papa, Papa, look, angels, angels. And I just got the biggest thrill out of that. I said, tell Papa about what you see.
Yeah.
See, now the other person, another person might respond, don't be silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are you talking about? I knew what she was talking about.
Yeah, because it's kind of neat when I do the reading for people, because their kids usually come up if they have kids. And since I'm very kid-oriented about, you know, their own well-being and their knowledge that they have that they're not being able to share, I talk about it with the parents, and I tell them, please, don't try to shut the child down. Don't try to tell them that it's just pretend. Don't tell them it's their imagination working overtime. Listen to them. Let them tell you what they're seeing. You might be surprised because they are really seeing it.
Yes.
You know, and they kind of look at me like, well, then maybe we ought to try it. It's like, yeah,
yeah.
That would be a good idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need more folks like you sharing, you know, your insights so that, you know, we can get a whole you know, community, again, a village of folks helping raise our children and being open to their metaphysical experiences.
Yeah, I just, you know, I find kids very fascinating because, you know, like my granddaughter is 8 going on 30.
Yeah, there you go.
Which is a lot of the kids of today.
Yes.
And, you know, she's very independent. She's very stubborn. She is very hard-headed. She is one of the biggest reasons why I put the Child's Miracle Mind together, because when she was very young, like at the age 3, even the Montessori schools is trying to tell my daughter that she has a chemical imbalance, she needs to be on something, she can't do this, she can't do that, she can't focus, you know, she's out of control. And it was really bothering my daughter. And I said to my daughter, I said, do me a favor, Tracy, which is my daughter, I said, tomorrow, when you go back to work, which she works at Montessori, I said, you ask them if she is so much out of control and she can't focus and she can't do this and she can't do that, why is it that she can watch a full-length video movie one time, and the next time that video movie is going to be going, she knows every single word from every single character that's being said, and she's working on her computer at the same time?
Yes, yes. These kids are multitasking,
yes,
aren't they? And I've got a, I'm thinking my 3-year-old granddaughter, Michaela, she's very much like that already. She has a full vocabulary. She sounds like an attorney. You know, the way she interrogates her siblings and grandparents and parents. But, yeah, this is going on. Of course, Phyllis Atwater talked about this in her books on near-death experience with children called The Indigo Children.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely that's going on. Sure, their third eye is opening and staying open longer and longer. And the adults, we know from medical studies, the third eye calcifies. The pineal gland tends to calcify. And, yeah, so I've always felt that I've operated from the third eye level of consciousness most of my life. And it's interesting, you know, to see the difference between those who get locked into a certain belief system at any level and those of us who have remained open and always say, well, let's see what happens. Let's wait. Let's look at this at a greater depth and broader perspective. And versus those who clamp down, this is the way, there's only one way, my way is the right way or the highway, and you get into that loop, and you see the trouble you have in society when you do that to somebody. You know, it's tragic. In other words, I've got adult friends who've lived 5-6 decades on this planet, and intellectually they're there with me, but emotionally, in terms of openness and imagination, they shut down when they were 5 years old. Their brain froze in place.
Yeah, and so when I was growing up and seeing all the things I could see, because I've seen visions forever, you know.
Yeah.
But again, I was very protected. I wasn't really allowed to say stuff to people because my angel said, not now.
Yes.
I'll let you know when. So they actually protected me.
Yes, they did.
I didn't have to go through that.
That's right.
You know, so when I talk to people, you know, and they're telling me, well, you know, I get this, I get that, and I mention it to this person, and they tell me, oh, what's the matter with you? I said, do yourself a favor, go inside, trust what you're feeling, don't share it until you know that it's okay time to share it.
Yeah, and this, you know, I've heard this story and this concept over and over again in my research with near-death experiencers. I've been with all those that most of us have heard, Danion Brinkley, Mellon Thomas, Benedict, Betty Eady, and so on and so forth, Kimberly Clark Sharp, Howard Storm, Ned Doherty, on and on. I went and sought these people out, and I learned a lot from them, no doubt about it. One of the things that always came through to me was this idea that they were protected. And I remember one fellow who was getting ready to go to the Vietnam War to be a helicopter pilot. And at the time, he was skydiving. He was a varsity athlete. And he got into the physical with the Army, as I went through myself, in fact, through helicopter flight medical part, so I know what he was going through. And the doctor came back and said, you're grounded medically, you have bad knee joints, and you can't participate in flight school. And he started to say, wait a minute, I'm skydiving, I'm a varsity athlete, there's nothing wrong with my body. And a voice in his head, which he realized later was an angel, said, shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Don't tell the doctor you're okay. Your war time is over. It's over. And he had a past life memory where he had been fighting back in the 12th, 13th century, and he was giving the coup de grace, the sacrificial, you know, killing of the dead, of the dying, wounded soldiers. It was grace, actually, he told me, that he was killing them so they wouldn't be eaten by the animals at night when the sun went down. And an angel appeared to him and said, you will never have to kill again. So see how profound this is when you have protection from angels like you have had, and you don't have to go through the psychiatric community and then fight your way through the drugs and the ostracism and all that, and you can remain whole and you can mature in a way and deal with this other realm in a way that will not harm you or others. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, it is really. You know, and when I look back, because once I wrote my autobiography, I really never read it.
I can relate.
It was all just channeled to me. Because I'm not good with a computer, man. I sat there all night one night and just typed, you know. So I really never reread my book that I wrote because I thought, well, I've already lived it. I don't need to reread it again. Mm-hmm. But it's really funny because some of the remembrances that I have is, you know, exactly what you're saying. I am protected. I stay protected. I help who needs to be helped. You know, I put myself out there. And it's not been a hard journey for me. But on the other hand, for a lot of people, it has been. And for those, I keep telling them, just stay within yourself. Trust what you're feeling. Trust what you're hearing. You know, stay with that. You are protected, and they are trying to help you.
That's right, absolutely. And my understanding is if we'd only just open up more and more to this idea of being protected, we would drop off a lot of our concerns, all that worry for nothing would dissolve itself. But I tell you what, I'm the worst at doing this. I'm still have a terminal disorder called maleness. I'm a male, as my wife points out to me. And I don't ask for help easy, and I don't ask, you know, for directions when we're driving either, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, that's the problem, and I suffer from that. But I'm getting better, you know, I'm getting older, and as I do so, I think that I can probably, you know, relax more into that idea that we're being cared for.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, this is a beautiful thing that we're talking about now. I think that that's important as natural disasters and economic collapse and all these other things that the news throws at us. We don't need to really be all that concerned about it for the most part. I mean, it's going to balance itself out. All systems, again, go into chaos right before they find a new order.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to see what that new order is going to look like. It's not going to be the new world order of the fundamentalist. It's not going to be some nightmarish outcome. It's going to be a beautiful thing. Now, if we fight this, we're going to see a backlash from Gaia, from Mother Earth. But Mother Earth is in charge. Her energy systems are way too powerful for us to ever control them, ever. We could never, ever control the outcome that Mother Earth has envisioned for herself. And that, again, is the Garden of Eden restored.
Mm-hmm. I have a strange question to ask you because we're almost out of time, but not quite. Do you believe that we're the only intelligent beings in the universe?
Well, I've asked myself on many a morning, is there any intelligent life on Earth after I watch CNN News?
Uh-huh.
But the universe is full of life. It's full of a lot of life like us, full of human-looking life, because our physical body is one of the most successful in carrying consciousness of the planet in an upright condition. We are the stewards, the caretakers, if you will. We've done a poor job of it, and we're about to be fired, but we are the caretakers of the Earth for good or for evil. But things are going to work out, and life on every planet has the same basic objective, and that is to stay alive in the physical form. So what we're going to see long-term is the body crystallizing, this DNA transmutations. We can, maybe another show we could talk about that, but what's going on is we're crystallizing into this higher dimensional physical form, and what we're really doing is growing into our solar body. Our sun's body of energy is what we're, hydrogen gas, in other words, is what we're trying to process more through our body. Now we do it through eating a vegetarian diet, those of us who can do that. I can't do that yet, but one lifetime soon I will, and so will you and all of us. And so if we understand that these natural processes here are also found throughout the galaxy and beyond, then we need to realize that, yes, it's full of life. The anomaly, the strangeness would be if you don't find life on a solar system like ours with a sun and planets aligned like us, and now we know there's millions of such systems within our own galaxy.
Yeah, which is
okay.
Really, you know.
Yeah, and we're a very young planet in a very young solar system in a very young galaxy. So we're, you know, life creation for us is just beginning. We're just now coming out of the dark ages. All the evolutionary processes are coming together now. Systems are converging. Things are networking together. The computer system is a good metaphor. That's what's coming together. We're building a huge database by which to live our life in a way that we'll never, ever have to work again. The hard work of the human being is almost at an end. It's all leading to this 2012 and beyond state of consciousness, the third eye opening.
Now, before we run out of time, please give out the name of your book again and your website.
Yes, the book is Transformers, Shamans of the 21st Century, and the DVD is Science of Soul, the End Time Cycle, Solar Cycle of Chaos in 2012 AD. All of that, much, much more, many more books and DVDs that can be evaluated through my website at johnjharper.com, johnjayharper.com.
John, it's been great having you on the show with me, and I would like to have you on another show because there's a lot more questions. I don't
a lot know. More. We've just opened the first introductory chapter to this stuff. Okay.
Probably very true.
Okay, but Nancy, thank you now.
Thank you very much. Have a rest and a happy Easter.
You too.
And I'd like to thank you, all the listeners. I hope you have enjoyed the show for today. And once again, I hope your Easter turns out exactly the way you'd like it to be. May God bless all of you. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you soon. Take care. Bye now.